You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarlane. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. I am joined by, of course, Trish McFarlane. Trish, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Of course, it's Trish McFarlane, right? I love when you say that, by the way. Sometimes I like, what would it sound like if you just said it was with someone else? I think you should maybe fill in maybe some like famous people instead, just to kind of throw people off, don't you think?
Okay. I'll keep that in mind maybe for the next show. Like, I'm joined by, Courtney Cox. Courtney, how are you today?
Exactly. Like, exactly. I could be whoever.
Yeah. Can you tell that's a real Gen X reference, by the way?
It really, of all the people you could have like dredged up out of your memory, that's an interesting
choice. I'm thinking, who do I have? A female? Who's a reference? Who's a good person to have on the show? That's the first one that came into my mind. So
either that or you somehow subliminally are trying to tell me I'm like, you know, neurotic like Courtney Cox. I don't know.
Was she the neurotic one? I wasn't a big, I mean, I liked Friends. I was more of a Seinfeld guy. In fact, I've been mocked lately by my son for just incessant streaming of Seinfeld reruns on Hulu. That's been my,
oh goodness. My thing.
So
Hulu is amazing for old shows, I will tell you, but I think that's interesting. Maybe that's a future show. If you know, whether or not you're a Seinfeld or Friends person, I'm definitely, yeah. I liked both, but more the Friends person, I have to admit. I've probably seen them all multiple times. So
yeah, the Seinfeld thing certainly too was, that's a little my East Coast slant, my East Coast bias. I grew up and lived, grown up and have lived the majority of my life on the East Coast. And Seinfeld,
right? You do realize Friends takes place in New York City, correct?
Yeah,
right?
But those Friends could have been from anywhere, really. That wasn't really.
They're not. All right, Steve, come on. This isn't a show about Seinfeld.
We're way off the topic. And just one more comment, though, real quick. We're recording this on a Friday. I can't wait for this week to be over. It's the wintertime. And literally everything that's horrible and cold that can fall out of the sky, Trish, has fallen on my head this week. From snow to sleet to freezing rain to just regular old rain to sideways rain. I don't know. The wind is whipping through here right now. It's an utter... it's utter misery here in Western New York. And I just want to say this. The next time I get to a place like South Carolina or Georgia or Florida, the next time I'm standing in South Carolina, Trish, I'm going to nail my feet to the ground and
you're
never leave.
That's it. Plan. You're done. I love it. Well, I have to tell you, St. Louis is good right now, but they say we're having a winter storm tonight. So we shall see. But that'll probably be our last one, though. You know, St. Louis, it kind of ends by about the end of February. So we're getting close to the end of our kind of snow and ice. But anyway, I'm happy. Even if you're not, it's okay.
Glad you're happy. That's all that matters. This is really, that's all. No one cares about me. So let's quickly. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. You want to get in touch with us, tweet us at HR Happy Hour. You can email either of us, Steve or Trish. Both of us are at h3hr.com. Add the HR Happy Hour Show to your Alexa device. It's on your flash briefing. Just search for the HR Happy Hour skill to your Alexa app. I was thinking about the generations because I did one yesterday that's live today as we record this about Gen Z. I'm all over the Gen Z. I'm training.
See, now you're
my
going for our fan base. You know, the teenagers here love our Alexa show. They like that little two or three minute quick hit of us. So that's
tell
good.
Your kids to listen because it's all about them this morning. So,
they listen all the time and their friends listen too. So, all right. We'll have to see what they think.
Finally, hrtechconference.com. Use my code Steve300 for 300 off your registration. All right, enough with the fun and games. We actually have a guest, Trish, patiently waiting for us to get through. And she has been very patient. And in the pre-show kind of conversation, I said, oh, we'll just be a minute. We're going to talk really quick. And,
of course, here we go. You never know.
We're 5 minutes in and we're blabbing on. Oh, and just last thing. We've got so many great shows that have come out recently. I'm not sure when they're all posting, but make sure you check out the HR Happy Hour Oscars preview show. We have recorded it. It hasn't posted yet. Make sure you check that out before you watch the Academy Awards, which are coming up really, really soon. Okay.
Absolutely.
We are talking inclusion in the workplace today, Trish. Our guest is Dr. Laura Hamill. Laura leads the LimeAid People Team, nurturing the company's award-winning culture of improvement while developing groundbreaking people practices and architecting employee engagement strategies for LimeAid and its 100-plus enterprise customers. Laura is also the founder and the chief science officer of the LimeAid Institute, which conducts proprietary research, establishes market points of view, and keeps a pulse on the latest employee well-being and engagement trends. Along with her team of PhD organizational psychologists, business insight experts, and data scientists, Laura works with LimeAid customers to translate the Institute's research into actionable strategies and hands-on workshops to strengthen and evolve their employee engagement strategies. I'm taking a breath. There's a big bio here, Laura. Laura, also, yeah. I'm skipping paragraph two. We're going to come back to that later. Laura earned her PhD in industrial organizational psychology from Old Dominion University and a BS in psychology from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. She currently lives in Woodinville, Washington, a place I've never heard of, but sounds lovely, with her husband, two children, and a golden retriever. All right, you win me over, Laura. I'm a dog person. So
me too.
You're my new favorite guest. Welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show, Laura. How are you?
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. And by the way, speaking of snow and weather, talk about that. That Seattle has been the worst. We had in Woodinville, where I live, 24 inches, and I've never seen that amount of snow.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, I know.
That's a lot.
Crazy. Yeah.
I take back my complaints about the weather. Where would Woodinville sort of be? Is it Seattle adjacent or somewhere else?
Yeah, it's just a suburb of Seattle. It's about 13 miles from Seattle. Yeah.
Learning something new very nice. All the time. Well, cool, Laura. And what's the golden retriever's name before we get on to the real stuff?
Stanley.
Oh.
The best. Oh, 105 I love that pounds name. Of love. He is the best. He is the best.
I am in favor
Steve,
of giving.
You may need to post a picture of Stanley in the show notes. So
yeah. We can get
maybe that's our new thing. Yeah. We have to post the pet pictures in the show notes from now on. I just called
it. I am in favor of giving dogs, especially like just kind of typical human names and not doggy sounding names.
No,
like
everybody's doing that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe not me. I have to. Can we talk dogs for one more second? My poor little dog, Marco Polo, which my children in the neighborhood kids named years ago because they thought it would be funny when I walked outside to call him Marco, then they would all yell Polo. Which that was great fun, but now he's blind, which is even funnier, really, when you think about a blind dog. Now that he's old, yeah. So that's I don't know. I guess that's after a person, but still, yeah. Marco Polo. There you go.
Okay, so we'll cover a lot of this in more depth on my other podcast, Doggy Daily, Laura. So let's get let's talk inclusion in the workplace. Yeah. And first off, Laura, you know, it seems to me we need to start with a definition, at least your definition of inclusion, and then maybe also just for me, because this is curious to me, how or if this is different, or how is it different than diversity? Because literally every single time I feel like I see the word inclusion in the workplace context, it's accompanied by the word diversity. So maybe we start there.
Yeah, for sure. So just a little bit of context before I jump into the definition. One of the functions that I am responsible for is this group called LimeAid Institute, and you gave a little bit of an overview there. We do primary research, secondary research on topics like inclusion, well-being, engagement, culture. We're really trying to be kind of research-driven, science-based in everything that we do at LimeAid. So that's why we've dug into inclusion, because we've really realized how important, and the evidence is very much there, how important inclusion is to being a great place to work. So that's why we've been really digging into this topic. And so to answer your question, how do we define inclusion based on some academic research and some of our own research too. It's really this idea of a sense of belonging, connection, community that you can have at work. When you have an inclusive workplace, people feel welcomed, they feel known, they feel valued, and they're really encouraged to bring their whole selves to work. And so what's really important about the concept of inclusion is this tension between being me, mm-hmm. and being part of we. And that's kind of the easy way I talk about it is, you know, I want to be part of something bigger, but I also want to be who I am and be valued for who I am. So that's what I think makes inclusion a little bit hard, is there's that natural tension of the me and the we that we have to balance in organizations. And to get to your kind of question about diversity and why is diversity and inclusion, you know, we always see it hand in hand. I think most of us know, right? The idea of diversity is we have all these amazing people who work here, who have all different kinds of backgrounds, experiences, perspectives, and we know that there's so much goodness in having those kinds of differences. The reason why inclusion is always goes hand in hand is it's not enough to just hire those people. It's not enough to just have people with all those differences in your organization. You actually have to create a culture, create a workplace where people feel like they can be themselves, where they feel like they're part of something, in order to see all of the fruits of that diversity come to life. So that's why we see these two concepts hand in hand all the time, is you really can't have one without the other. And we really see there's an interesting opportunity in this inclusion space, because a lot of organizations seem to kind of be doing lip service to inclusion, meaning they sort of treat it like something they put on their website or something that feels like a program or a, you know, external community or PR kind of thing. And they're not really doing the hard work to make inclusion come to life.
Yeah, Laura, thank you for that context and kind of that level setting. That was really, really helpful. And I feel like I'd agree with you in that, you know, the two words always go together. And I also feel like, at least from my perspective, maybe it's a little bit more of a tech perspective, that we're only really kind of talking about the first word, the diversity word, right? And talking about things like expanding the pipeline and reaching into underserved communities for recruiting purposes, et cetera, et cetera. And that's a huge problem. I'm not trying to diminish that challenge or that problem and the steps that organizations are trying to take to address it. But I do feel like a lot of the conversation anyway kind of stops there and doesn't carry over to the inclusion side of this equation, if you will.
Yep, exactly. And I've heard some just terribly sad stories from people who are recruiters, actually, who are focused on diversity hiring. And they have focused so hard to get these people with amazing talent to come into their organizations. And then they become so bummed out when these people are leaving, you know, way before we would want them to, because the organization didn't treat them well. And so I was talking to an executive recruiter who said she quit. She stopped being an executive diversity recruiter because she felt like it was so disingenuous to spend all this time in hiring these amazing people, you know, having them move across the country, and then they get to the place of work and they're really not treated well. They're not supported. Their differences aren't really valued. And so it's a big deal for us to be really thinking differently about what inclusion is. And again, I think the key point that I would really like to make around inclusion is it's about how people are treated behind closed doors. It's about how people are treated between you and your manager. How are you really valued? How are your ideas listened to? How are you really treated and included in big meetings, right? It's those kinds of things, those thousands of different interactions that happen at work. Do you feel listened to, valued, included in those? And that's what we're trying to get to. Not that there's a really cool HR program or really great, you know, PR on this. It's really about how we treat people and in those small interactions. And that really all those little interactions add up to an overall feeling of inclusion or not. And so that's what I think we need to really be moving toward, is how we make this real, how we make it really feel like you're treated in an inclusive way.
Yeah, I think one of the things is I'm just kind of thinking back to employers I've worked with over the years myself. It's always hard when you make those really great diverse hires. It feels hard sometimes for companies to understand where those points of commonality lie, which I think is what maybe starts that building on the inclusion piece. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like you almost focus so much on
the differences that you're bringing in their skills, in their background, in their education, whatever, that once the, you know, candidate becomes an employee and they get there, then it's like we're asking our leaders to kind of flip the script and, okay, now find the commonalities. And, you know, there weren't always tools for that, but I do feel like that's where maybe, you know, in this conversation, we're going to hear more about how do you make those little bridges to start building that inclusive culture? Because without that, I feel like some of the organizations I've either worked for or that I talk to now, they feel a little stuck. So, I mean, do you have that sort of come up when you're out talking with customers and potential customers?
Yeah, absolutely, Trish. It's such an important point. And that's, again, what I think is so beautiful about the topic of inclusion, but also so challenging and hard, again, is that balance of the me and the we, and it can't be one more than the other. And we have to really find ways to be able to have both of those things be true at the same time, right? And it's always hard when you have two things that feel like they're opposing, but we actually have to balance those and have those be true at the same time. So I think that's where there's just so much work to do around us being more savvy about human interaction, honestly, and how we support people and move away from thinking, oh, wait, our whole organization did a day-long unconscious bias training and we're all done. We've checked that box. There's so much more to it than that. And it's one of the things that we recently found in some research that we've done in Limeade Institute is, of course, leaders matter in this conversation. Of course, managers matter in this conversation. But we actually found in some of our statistical analysis that the team that the person works with is the most important component when we're thinking about inclusion. So the others were all statistically still related to feeling included, but how your team includes you came out as the most important part of this. So there's a lot more for us to do to really understand what does that look like on your, you know, the group of peers who are around you, your team. What does inclusion really look like? What are those behaviors that are underneath that? How can we start creating new habits that start to play out in the day-to-day work around how we treat each other? And that's really what we focus on here at Limeade.
Can I ask one quick question related to that?
Yeah, of course.
I'm sorry. Just as I'm thinking through, one of the things I've sort of seen is that if you put an employee into a new work team, for example, they've just joined your company, often there's like a sort of unofficial untitled leader of that work team. And by that, I mean, sort of that one person who is either really positive or could be really negative. Have you seen in your research many results on maybe someone who can sort of derail the person's inclusion in a whole team with just that one person? Or are you seeing it more as kind of equal parts of all the team members when someone's first hired?
I think that's an opportunity maybe for further research. What we were doing was just looking at it kind of in a, you know, all these different groups or teams that could impact how included you feel, which ones make the most difference in you feeling included. And so we didn't get to that specific kind of part of it, but that's a really good idea of, you know, how much an individual person can impact this whole thing. You know, one of the things that I think it's so interesting is how much the topic of inclusion is related to other really important topics. And so what I was kind of thinking as you were saying that is the topic of engagement. You know, if there are people on the team who aren't engaged, they absolutely will have an impact on other people, right? And have an influence on them. So kind of to your point, or if there's somebody who's burned out, right? And kind of toxic, they absolutely will impact other people. So that's what I think is really exciting about this whole thing is how does well-being, employee engagement and inclusion, how do they all come together? How do we really understand this much more from the perspective of the employee and maybe less so from the perspective of our HR silos. Sadly, it's probably pretty clear to the audience, is it tends to be, you know, that well-being is a topic that the benefits organization owns. Engagement is in a talent group. And then inclusion is in the diversity and inclusion group, right? And never the right. three organizations shall talk, much less work together to solve some of these things that really are overarching. So I absolutely agree with you that there are people in the team who can have such power over how people feel about work. And there's just so much more I think we need to do as HR organizations to really be thinking about how we solve this from the employee's perspective.
Right. Thank you.
Laura, thanks. And you know, maybe I'm a simple person, and they do say that there are no such thing as dumb questions, just dumb people asking questions. So I'm gonna ask this one, because I've never really been in a formal workplace where, like, I feel like we were talking about these issues and like deliberately or intentionally. And so you mentioned, Laura, that this is made up of lots of little behaviors, lots of little micro kind of transactions, if you will, or micro interactions in the workplace that tend to build and build on each other. What are some of the things that you guys work on with organizations that are sort of specific to this in terms of like, and I'll ask the question in a different way. This is the dumb question part. Like, what's kind of the difference between trying to demonstrate inclusive behaviors and just being nice, or just being like a nice coworker and just being respectful in general? Yeah. Is there a difference? And if so, what are some of those differences that you work with organizations on?
Absolutely. That's not a dumb question at all.
All right. Well, thank you.
So I think that the most well-intentioned people, the nicest people, still can act in ways that aren't inclusive. Because I think there's just an awareness, and there's kind of a realizing our impact on others that maybe we haven't had good role models for, or maybe we haven't really been able to see. And I think that there's a lot of reasons why organizations are starting to get smarter about this. But let me try to break it down a little bit more for you.
Okay.
I think the difference between kind of nice and the habits and behaviors that I'm talking about, I'll just give you some examples. So think about whether or not an employee has a voice, meaning do we ask the employee for their input or for what they think about something, for their ideas, and then do we tend to listen to that voice? Do we create formal ways to do that, informal ways to do that? Is it something that's just easy to have happen? And I see huge differences in organizations around whether or not employees really have a voice. You can see it, right, when you go into an organization where maybe there's a company meeting or a big team meeting of some sort and nobody's talking but the leader. So having a voice is an example of the difference between, you know, being nice and have this be a real habit. Whether or not people feel like they can really be themselves at work. So do people at work know what their home life is like, what their relationships are like, what their cares and worries and concerns are, what their, you know, what kinds of things that they're thinking about and that might be really hard for them to deal with in their lives? Do we have a sense of the uniqueness of each person? Do we feel like people can say those things and be honest about their uniqueness and there aren't any negative consequences? In fact, there are positive consequences, right, for sharing. And so that's another example. Whether or not people just feel recognized. You know, I think organizations spend so much money on these crazy, you know, big awards and recognition programs that have all these fancy, you know, gift cards and things like that, when really, and what people want is an authentic thank you from somebody who matters to them. And so I think there's just so much more in that day-to-day work in whether or not people feel valued. So those are just a few examples.
No, those are great. Thank you. Yeah,
for sure. And again, somebody could be a perfectly nice person, but they might not really see how these small things that need to happen at work can really be the difference in whether or not somebody feels included.
Yeah. And that voice, that first example you gave, Laura, do people have a voice in the workplace? Are they heard? And one of the really interesting things, and it's very primitive in a way, but like even this little tool we use here to record these shows and the calls, when the call is over with and we download the recording, the platform tells me how many minutes each person talked. And I always look at it to make sure, like, I'm not, I try to, like, I don't want to talk too much really. And, so I'm kind of looking at it from the other perspective, but I have seen some things like that in the workplace where it's like, are we making sure that people are allowed to speak up or and not even allowed to, encouraged to, right? We're asking for their opinions. We're calling them out if they're maybe a little shy or maybe they feel like maybe they're more junior in the organization and don't necessarily feel like it's their place to speak up. And you do really need to be intentional about some of those things. And I guess you really did illustrate to me how that's different than just being nice and respectful.
Completely. And it's so important. And there's so many layers of that, right? We all know those people who tend to be leaders and sadly sometimes tend to be male who fill up a whole room and there's no air left in the room for anybody else who's there. Right. And it's a real thing. And there's probably a ton of good intention around all the ideas that that person has. But we're missing out so much on having people feel like they're part of something bigger and all the great ideas they have and all the different perspectives that they bring when we have, again, people who are leaders who tend to fill up the room and be the main ones that are talking. So it is really important. And, you know, there's so much that's in that, right? There's a lot around hierarchy and power that is involved in how we think about things like having a voice that's really hard to unpack. And it's hard mm-hmm. to change people. But I think in organizations that do, they just really have a culture that is, to me, more supportive.
Let me do a quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. I'm with Trish McFarlane. Our guest today is Dr. Laura Hamill from LIMED. We're talking about inclusion in the workplace. And Laura, you know, I let that one slide a little bit about the males taking up all the energy in the room. So I'm
trying to lay back. Sometimes males.
It's usually us. You're right. Hey, Laura, the last thing I was thinking about, and Trish, I don't know if you thought about this too, but I know I did, is are there ways for organizations to kind of measure this and kind of keep track of how they're doing specifically to inclusion? Or is it only something we can measure, you know, indirectly by virtue of things like turnover rates and employee, you know, engagement scores, you know, on the downslope? Is there something we can do or organizations can do to really understand, are they creating an inclusive workplace? And if not, how can they get better? Is there ways to kind of actually see that?
Yeah. So absolutely. That's something that we did from a LIMED Institute perspective. One of the first things that we did was, again, this literature review, looking at the existing academic literature that's out there. And from that, really understanding what are the sub-constructs that are underlying inclusion. And they're related to some of the things I was saying before, right? The having a voice, belonging, sense of uniqueness, feeling valued. And you absolutely can behavioralize those. You absolutely can look at ways to put those into a survey. And that's one of the first things that we did when we created our approach to how we think about inclusion. So we do that. We measure inclusion, and we have what I think is kind of the best part of it is we have specific habit building activities that are associated with those different subconstructs. So how can we get people in the organization to start doing things just a little bit differently, trying something different in a team meeting, asking for input or asking people for their points of view or their perspectives in different ways than they ever have before. So we really believe that starting to make this more actionable, behavioral, make it more something that people can practice to start building those habits is so important. And so the survey part for us just sets the baseline. It helps us know where to focus, but then it also helps us show where we're making progress. So it is, I think, really important to measure things that feel kind of amorphous, feel hard to define. It's so important to actually behavioralize those things so that we can take action on them in organizations. That's something that my whole career I've been really into is, you know, how do you operationalize culture and make that be something that we can get our hands wrapped around? How do you operationalize well-being and how do we do something with that and measure that? Same with employee engagement. It's just sort of, to me, the stuff that matters so much in organizations tends to be the stuff that feels harder to get our hands wrapped around. And in order for us to really make a difference, make improvements in these areas that matter so much, we have to do that. We have to operationalize. We have to know what are the different constructs that we're talking about and how can we measure them over time. So, yeah, that's kind of one of my things I think is just so important is how to make this stuff real. Move it away from just being this feeling to something that's actionable.
Laura, I think, too, it's interesting because if you were to be talking with HR leaders, for example, the types of activities you're talking about are things that they really tend to enjoy doing, right? It's getting involved with the employee base around, you know, their well-being and how they're progressing in the organization and whether or not they are fitting in. And those things have in the past been harder to measure, or at least it seemed that way when I was doing it. So it's exciting for me, kind of with the HR hat on, thinking about, you know, if I'm a practitioner out there and there's research now available on maybe how to do this better, how to set up that type of culture or at least encourage that type of culture. I think that's a real turning point too in the workplace right now is being able to access some of these things you're talking about and really make it actionable and meaningful because, you know, 15 years ago, we might have struggled more with convincing the rest of the C-suite that what we were doing or focusing on was valuable because we weren't measuring it in the right way.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I'm so encouraged about the evolution of these kinds of concepts like inclusion, like culture, like well-being, that so many more organizations are realizing that it's good for their business to care about people, right?
Right,
and,
right.
It's so encouraging.
Imagine that.
I know, imagine that. But there really seems to be momentum here. And to me, there's so many. It's just neat to see large organizations who are really embracing this and then trying to make it real, right? It's one thing to just say, you know, people first as your mantra, but like, how do you show in tangible ways that people are first? And how do we make that feel very authentic and consistent for employees? And so that's why I really think this topic of employee experience is such an important one because we have to be thinking about it from their perspective. Not from the silos in HR that we tend to have, or not through just one of these lenses. It has to be really integrated how we think about these concepts.
Laura, I think this has really been a fascinating conversation for me. I've learned a couple of things, and also I'm encouraged a little bit. Like I'm encouraged by the fact that you know there are ways for organizations to address these kinds of issues, to be deliberate about how they approach them, to improve, right, and to help build workplaces that are more inclusive, right? Because I mean, I feel like I said at the top, I feel like we've been talking about this for a long time and we kind of don't get very far often. Yeah. And I think some of what can help organizations is thinking about it kind of in the way you've laid it out, right? It's made up of lots of interactions and specific things that happen inside the workplace that they can be measured, that the team and the peers are play a huge role in this, and understanding that can help organizations address these challenges. And then finally to kind of approach them as a component of the overall experience of working in the organization rather than its own thing. It makes a ton of sense. And this has been a really, I don't know, for me, Trish, I've been really fascinated by this conversation. I've loved it.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I think there's so much possibility that organizations still can, you know, tap into. And I don't know, this type of research, I think, gives that backup to the companies who maybe have wanted to dig in more and haven't really made it a priority yet. So kind of a good nudge to get them going.
Laura, just the last thing then, for folks who want to learn more about this, how they can get involved, how they can get better maybe, and just kind of explore the kinds of things you're working on in the team there, where would you have them go?
Absolutely. So Limeade.com, so it's Limeade.com. We have a whole section that we call the Limeade Institute. There are all kinds of resources there. So there are some white papers and ebooks and things like that that summarize some of our research, and we encourage people to go and look at those. We obviously are a software company that we are always looking for new customers, but at the same time, we also feel very dedicated and committed to really helping people understand these topics and moving this forward even outside of what we do as a business. And so we have lots of resources that are available to people if anybody's interested.
Laura, thank you for that. We'll put those links in the show notes, of course. Been a great conversation. So, can I just say something, Trish? I just want to admit something here, and to Laura as well. Like how horrible a person I am. Oh, goodness. How I approach
Go right
the world.
Ahead. Let it out.
Laura, at the beginning of the show, we intro Laura and we say she lives in Washington with her husband, two children, and the Golden Retriever. All I wanted to talk about was the Golden Retriever. I have children. It's like,
you didn't ask the children's names.
No, I don't care.
Husband's name. Hey, I get it.
I'm probably a swell guy. We don't care about him, the children. Let's talk about the dog for 5 minutes.
But you know, yeah. Laura didn't really stop you either. She didn't say no.
I know. I went right to Stanley. You're right.
We know how much Stanley weighs. We know how lovable he is.
Oh, yes. Completely.
We've learned a lot about him.
That's cute.
Oh, this has been super fun. Thanks again, Dr. Laura Hamill from LimeAid. This is great stuff, all about inclusion, and we'll be sure to share all the links to all the great resources from the LimeAid Institute and what they're doing around inclusion. Really, really interesting, and kind of the first time we've talked about this in a long time on the show, Trish, and I'm glad we did that today.
Me too. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you so much. That was really fun. Thank you.
All right, Trish, I think we're out. You got anything for the send-off, or are we sending off?
No, let's send it off. Listen to the Oscar show. That's it.
Listen to the Oscar show and let us know how we did and let us know your picks. Tweet us at HR Happy Hour. Remember to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast. My name is Steve Bowes for Trish McFarland. For our guest, Dr. Laura Hamill, this has been the HR Happy Hour show. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time. Bye for now. Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour show. Your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.